This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. I'm taping this interview from my home via Zoom, and our taping is mixed by Jason Sikora of Raider, our longtime sponsor. Raider is a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work. We understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. I'd like to thank our premier sponsors. First, Iberia Bank. They support our community in so many ways, including this podcast, and their dynamic team is committed to serving the banking needs of clients in this region and throughout the southeastern United States. Iberia Bank offers the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit iberiabank.com for more information. The generosity of Lafayette General Health also makes this podcast possible. Lafayette General has been a leader in telemedicine. With the Health Anywhere app, your family can access quality urgent care at any time without an appointment, all from the comfort of home. It's the waiting room redefined. Download the app today at lghealthanywhere.com. Greg Gautreau, President and CEO of Lafayette Economic Development Authority, is our guest today. Greg has served in this role since 1995. Greg's program of work with LEDA involves long-term economic development strategy. His focus is on attracting new business to our community while sustaining business conditions for existing enterprises, both large and small, who are the backbone of our economy. Greg was named a Business Hall of Fame laureate by the Junior Achievement of Acadiana, has been bestowed the Richard E. Beaudoin Jr. Award from the Acadiana Business Hall of Fame, the Distinguished Alumnus Award from the Leadership Institute of Acadiana, and named one of the 25 most powerful people on the Interstate Corridor by 1012 Magazine. A Louisiana native, Greg Gautreau graduated from LSU and enjoys honing his skills as a certified Louisiana Master Gardener. He is a graduate of Leadership Lafayette and Leadership Louisiana. Greg Gautreau, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Good to be here, Jan. Thank you.
Yeah. You've been a big helper, supporter, I can't think of all the words, from my trek in the business world. And I want to thank you for all you've done. When I was with Upper Lafayette, LEDA was so supportive. And I learned a lot by sitting in on your meetings when you would talk about economic development and trying to get new business in while helping people stay in business. And these have really been trying times with the COVID outbreaks. I thought it'd be a good time to talk about what you do with LEDA, some recent business successes, and then talk about our economy and where we are.
Happy to. We've been really busy, obviously, during the COVID-19 crisis. It's been obviously a health crisis and an economic crisis. And I think it points to some things that we need to get straight as a country overall, but maybe a little of that later. We have had success during this tough time. And a lot of people don't realize that there are still companies making decisions to move or to grow because they happen to be in areas that are still growing. One of which is SchoolMint. And they made an announcement just a couple of weeks ago that they're going to create 178 new positions in Lafayette. That's pretty exciting. They're moving their headquarters from San Francisco. That is not a surprise, but it's been difficult to work out. People want to move out of California, but they're typically going to Arizona or someplace a little closer because of lots of reasons. And so having a company come all the way to Louisiana takes a lot of personal relationships and that sort of thing. And it's been very exciting to go through this process. We're going to be working with other companies that are looking to either relocate or expand, and many of them over time will be California-based companies. Mm-hmm. It's just a tough.
Is LUS fiber one of the draws, like the high speed internet? Is that a draw, or is it a whole package that they're looking at?
Well, it's a whole package, and it takes a team. It's the state, it's the city, parish, and LEDA, you know, chambers of commerce. It takes a whole team to put the package together. But generally speaking, LUS Fiber is, and LUS is a big part of the team. They can provide services that are just unparalleled throughout the United States.
Right.
And because of that, it means a lot when a company, particularly a company like Schoolmint, we're talking about average $75,000 a job. And think about this for a moment. When the COVID pandemic started, and we were all scrambling to, you know, go virtual and that sort of thing, within a couple of days, CGI had 4 people in their building and 500 plus working from home. They never missed a beat.
Right.
They didn't have to lay anybody off. In fact, they've been hiring during this time. And so that's the kind of thing that a company like that, combined with infrastructure like LUS Fiber, can really do for us.
I'm glad you brought up CGI. When I was thinking about our interview, I thought the world is changing so quickly. And first of all, we have to scramble to keep up if we're used to the way it's always been. But this tech sector that Lafayette decided to go after a while back has laid the groundwork for us to stay on our feet. And I know you call it the wildcatter mentality, but even with all the things hitting the fan right now, we have some very strong companies that are not only here and growing, but people wanting to move here. And it's a balancing act, isn't it? Because we've also got our traditional oil and gas industry that's been hit so hard through no fault of their own. So we're losing jobs, and then we're gaining higher skilled tech jobs. If you want to touch on that.
Yeah, very much a balancing act. And, you know, we've worked since the 80s, not only on technology initiatives under one name or another, but we've also worked to diversify the economy. But I've always said this, and I'll keep saying it, we never work to diversify away from oil and gas.
Right.
Always work to diversify with oil and gas. Mm-hmm. And we think that we've done a good job because this is still a place where people want to have their oil and gas production companies. But it's become more difficult because of the price of oil. Obviously, $42, which is where we are, I think, right now, is not enough for people to make money, particularly in the service sectors, which is, you know, upstream and downstream from the actual production. And so working to diversify means that we've wanted to expand, we've worked to expand, and we have expanded our medical areas, our technical areas, our entertainment areas, which are getting hit really obviously terribly right now. But that diversification allows us to weather this a little bit. So if you think about it for a moment, we've got companies like Schoolmint, 178 new technology jobs, ViMed, 220 new medical and technology jobs, LAC Group, 500 new medical jobs. CGI decided to add 400 more because this is the place that their workforce is great. Their workforce is comfortable here. They have low attrition rates, et cetera. And then we have OEM graduates.
Yeah.
And we have, you know, as I said, other things in the works. Mm-hmm. So we're working diligently to diversify with the industry. And you don't realize a lot of people don't realize the effect that oil and gas suffering has on an economy. For instance, the aviation economy, in this part of the world is suffering because of the oil and gas issue. I mean, when 2014, when this all started, we lost over $100 billion of capital projects in the United States. And there's no cheap gas that's going to compensate for that. And so companies that were doing well in aviation really cratered. Companies that were doing well in so many industries that depended on the petroleum industry. And I think people don't understand that fully.
I hadn't thought about that. I knew the aviation industry was suffering. And you know, this morning, Greg, in the paper, or maybe it was on the 10-12 quarter email, I saw that Louisiana is among five states hit hardest by oil field job cuts, losing 10,200 jobs so far in 2020. And ironically, you know, we work so hard in the U.S. to become energy independent. I had Mark Miller on a few months ago when all this was beginning back in March, April, and everything had been going so well. And, you know, the price of production had gone down. People were becoming more efficient. And then to have the floor just drop and, you know, demand just diminish overnight. You know, I just, it's you want to be optimistic. And I feel optimistic. I feel concerned. But this economy, you've seen it through the years from the 80s on forward. We've gone through some tough times, but nothing like this.
That's right.
Hitting us like health and the economy at the same time.
That's correct. This is a 1-2 punch that we are feeling that many places in the country are not, that we suffer through because in the case of oil and gas, because it's a commodity and the price rises and falls on a global scale. Mm-hmm. The answer, once again, is to continue to diversify. We have got to, the oil and gas employee are some of the most creative people in the world. They can invent things on the fly. It's really fun to hear stories about how creative and ingenious these people are. But we've got to transfer those skills to some other positions. And indeed, many people in the oil industry have found employment in other areas and are adapting to that. One of the problems is the oil and gas industry pays so well. And so you need companies almost like technology to even come close to matching that. Medical areas that are really high wage areas. And that's difficult to do because manufacturing is not necessarily, it used to be the high wage position. It isn't. What it used to be, because technology is kind of the new manufacturing software, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that there's no doubt that we're suffering. This is the worst last quarter. The first quarter of 2020 was the worst quarter we've had in history in terms of the economic performance index, which is really at 16,000 indicators. It's a real number. And it tells you where you stand. Now, we've already rebounded a little bit, and there are reasons why that is happening. And we're going to just have to look and see what the next quarter hold. Certainly, unemployment benefits at $600 a week made our predictions off. I mean, it took our predictions off the table because of the extra money that some people had. And the fact that other people weren't, you know, really, really struggling as much as they would have for that $600 a week, $2,400 a month. And so if you look at it from that perspective, you understand that we've kind of these trillions of dollars going into the economy have kind of bolstered us up a little bit falsely in the second quarter. The first quarter was a little bit more what we had predicted. So we're just going to have to continue to diversify and be attractive. And, you know, Jan, in the post-COVID world, one thing I think people really understand now is they can work from anywhere and they can be any place in a short period of time because they've had to do it. And therefore, I mean, therefore, it's go where the quality of life is best. And I think we've got a good story to tell when it comes to that.
Greg, let's pause on that note because that's a lot of food for thought. In each episode, we pause for Discover Lafayette's Past. And I'd like to thank our friends at Rally Marketing for sponsoring this segment. Rally Marketing is a full-service digital marketing agency that can assist people with marketing automation, content development, and strategies on how to use social media to turn into a moneymaker for their business. For more information, please visit rallymarketing.com. And now the moment. I thought we'd talk about something fun. South Louisiana is home to the greatest free party on earth, a colorful celebration known as Mardi Gras. But what most people see on the weekend before Lent actually starts much earlier. The entire carnival season runs several winter weeks in Lafayette and throughout the Acadian region and includes carnival balls, parades, Mardi Gras runs, and special events. Carnival begins on January 6th, the 12th night of Christmas, or the Epiphany, when the three wise men brought gifts to the baby Jesus. And then the carnival season continues until Mardi Gras, the Tuesday before Ash Wednesday. The first recorded celebration of Lafayette Mardi Gras was on February 14, 1869, when, according to the local newspaper, Clemence Band provided the music in the courthouse. The first citywide Mardi Gras observance happened on March 2, 1897, when Judge Martin reigned as King Attakapaw, and he roared into Lafayette on a Southern Pacific locomotive that had been transformed into his royal throne. All future kings arrived in Lafayette in the same grand manner, until 1961, when Herbert Abdallah, the 22nd King Gabriel, used the train for the last time. In 1958, the Lafayette Mardi Gras Association was created, and today, as the Greater Louisiana Southwest Mardi Gras Association, it encompasses more than 20 carnival crews that host at their own expense pageants, balls, and parades. And I wanted to get that in. That's something we can't really do virtually, you know?
Yeah.
Mardi Gras... One of the most beloved traditions in our community. And I know it brings in a lot of economic opportunities for people. There's a lot of money spent and a lot of fun had, you know, in various ways. So we're all praying that we can get back on track with their health. And so we can celebrate Mardi Gras.
Well, that's a great piece, Jan. And it really points out what we talked about earlier. The entertainment industry has probably been hit hardest by all this. Because of virtually a complete shutdown. And as you say, you can't really celebrate Mardi Gras and those things effectively virtually.
Right.
You know, in the scheme of things, we'll never replace human interaction, and we don't want to. It's what makes us human. And I think that we're going to have to figure all this out. But I think we're the people that can do it. And I think that Mardi Gras is just an example of why we need to get back to some level of normalcy.
Right. People here are really self-starters, want to be self-sufficient. And when you were talking about the money that was pumped into the economy, you know, as I read the paper this morning, looking at sales being higher than expected, tax collections were higher than expected, higher than the consolidated government had anticipated. I hadn't really thought about it, it's so obvious, but the effect of that short-term infusion. So as we move forward, you know, people that are trying to transition, maybe get more skills, a lot of people are realizing that there's been a divide. I think it's shown the light on people that can work from home because they might be more, they're either techie or they're providing services such as accounting or other higher skilled jobs where you don't have to be in an office, but so many people have to work by the hour. They were already probably not paid sufficiently, and you can only work so many minimum hours a week. And it's been a real eye-opener as to the divide, not just in our community, but everywhere, you know.
Actually, we're somewhat blessed because our divide in terms of income is less than many places, but particularly in the South. Mm-hmm. But that having been said, you are right But we predicted lower numbers too. Who would have imagined that Congress was going to give every person unemployed $600 a week? That's just amazing, an amazing number. And so I've said all along, we need to look at the September numbers. That's really going to be where the other shoe drops. Well, that may be delayed even further if Congress decides to do another stimulus package. I mean, if they go with they go with $400 to $600 or whatever dollars a week. Well, that will continue this, this trend of things not being as bad as they should be, so to speak, based on the shutdown of things.
Right.
But then you look at a couple of things. You look at the elective surgeries. You look at the Mardi Gras and festival events. You look at the things that are being affected. You know, obvious entertainment industry, movies, restaurants, bars, et cetera. How long can they operate under these conditions? And the answer is not long. Right. I mean, you're going to see, no matter how much money there is out there by the government, under the restrictions that exist, you're going to see people not being able to survive. You can't run most people can't make a restaurant profitable on 50%. Of what they did before.
Right.
I mean, the margins are not usually there. And so with that said, we've got to, if the federal government has enough coming down to bolster the economy until we get a vaccine or until this thing goes away, if it goes away or somehow or another goes away, then we, I think, can not experience the depth of depression that we were afraid of. But that's a matter of, it's a bigger matter than me, but Stephen Barnes over at UL said, this is going to be a long haul. And I tend to agree with him, because sooner or later, the federal government's not going to stop, is going to stop sending money down.
Mm-hmm. And Louisiana is going to run out of money in their unemployment fund, and then businesses will be called upon to give more. So yeah, it's going to be a marathon.
Yes. And Louisiana's tax system is not stable because they rely so much on personal income tax and sales tax. Whereas places like Texas and Florida, they're not feeling this the way we are. Number one, because like in Florida, they don't really have an oil and gas industry. So that's not hurting them so badly. They have obviously a huge entertainment industry, and that's hurting, but their base is property tax. Property tax are not going to change for a while. And people are going to pay their property tax tremendously more than they pay in Louisiana, in Texas and Florida and other states like that. And their economy and their, government funds will be more stable over time. So it's probably a good time to look at that. I think that no personal income tax is really the way to go, because it's pretty obvious that we discourage the American dream at a certain point when people start making money and they realize, hey, all I have to do is move not far away and not have to pay all this kind of tax. And my property tax is minuscule compared to personal income tax when you start making.
It's going to take quite a feat to re-examine that homestead exemption in the state of Louisiana, but that seems to be the obvious answer, but it's just a political
I understand what you're saying, and I don't really suggest we have to re-examine it. I suggest that it's got to be uniform across the board, and it's got to be done accurately, and I suggest that $100,000 is not a ridiculous amount. It means that people that make less will not have to pay much. But I do believe that an accurate assessment across the board in Louisiana could bring in more money. And I go to towns and I see their millage, and it's so low that, it still doesn't bring in much. And they're totally relying on sales tax in that regard.
I see.
Because they don't get income tax.
Yeah. Obviously. Well, Noted. I hear you. How did the virtual job fair go? I know you just held your annual job fair, and I was curious what types of employers were there.
Yeah, we had about 50 employers there and over 400.
They were like, where were they?
Okay. We have a software called Brazen. And so you get a virtual booth and you sit in the booth and then you manage people going into the booth. And so we had 421 job seekers and they did several hundred interviews. And it was kind of interesting. What we saw was that the better paying positions had lots of candidates, but the lower paying, more entry-level positions did not. And that probably points to maybe a lack of sophistication to be able to understand this software. So that's another reason why we got to do some elements of job fairs in person, particularly at entry-level areas. But it was a great success. The software worked beautifully, and it has allowed us now to have two or three job fairs. We've had a veterans job fair. We've had a medical job fair. We've had all kinds of specialty job fairs, and we'll be having a special job fair for schoolmen coming up. So we're hoping to, you know, to eventually get to, I mean, the job fair was in May in person.
Right.
And we'd have 2,000 job seekers and 100 companies. So in essence, we cut the job seekers by 3/4 and the companies by half. And we had a good job fair, but we were trying to do virtual and in person, and we just couldn't get there yet with us being in stage two and kept in stage two. And we didn't want to cancel the job fair overall, so we did it this way. But it's vitally important that people can do interviews in person, as I said, particularly for entry level. But it's been, you know, it was successful. We had 865 chats or interviews that took place during that day. So, and this is a good number. I'll look over and look at it. But we had since March of 2017 to March of 2020, we've had 24,000 visitors to Lafayette/jobs/help wanted.
Wow.
You know, in Help Wanted. So people use our continuing virtual job fair quite a bit.
Right. Greg, while we're talking about the job fair, I'm thinking about all the things that LEADA does, Lafayette Economic Development Authority, what you do to help people that I don't know that a lot of people realize doesn't cost money. You're there funded by taxpayer dollars, and you have a very competent staff. You've had a great staff through the years. You can help businesses looking about where to locate, how to locate, tax, you know, deferrals, tax help from all these different things. Would you talk about what is the purpose of LEADA? Like, why do people go to you for interviews when there's a job issue or a tax collection issue?
I guess we call ourselves a full service economic development organization. We don't concentrate on any one area. Basically, our mission and our goal is to keep existing companies, to help them to grow, to hire our people, and to attract companies from other places, usually expansions, to help get jobs for our people. That, in essence, in a nutshell, is it. But there are so many things that go into it. And that is, for instance, one of the first things when LEADA was created that was done was a business park was built. That's South Park. And it was to make sure that when you're in a competitive situation, you had land available to compete with other areas of the country to bring in a big prospect or a big expansion.
Okay. That was the first one? The one
South Park was the first one.
Oh, okay. On that corridor where the oil and gas and
Wow. And we had four. But it's diverse. there's only a couple of oil and gas companies in there. It's a very diverse park. And people don't realize that that was the goal starting in the 70s when they brought in, our predecessors brought in a cardboard plant, you know, and international paper. They made corrugated boxes. Mm-hmm. And it's still there under a different name operating since then. And it was done specifically to diversify the economy. And I think that in many cases, we talk about Lafayette's fathers, so to speak, and mothers, the people that started the community, they really were far thinking. I mean, if you look at all the historical things that this community did, it's amazing. So we want to, then we kind of moved into, well, office buildings are our industrial parks. And so we created the Opportunity Machine in order to help facilitate filling office buildings. And in fact, there are many graduates now occupying offices all over this community and even some warehouses that have graduated from the Opportunity Machine. And so that's been a reason sort of not to build any more industrial parks. Just make sure you have a little industrial land available, but to basically help fill up those office buildings. Mm-hmm. I mean, CGI's 400 job expansion into the former Mid-South building is on Versailles, mm-hmm. is a perfect example of that. And, you know, you see other examples, you know, all over. And I think that's important that we not just worry about building new, but we want to expand and we want to grow into existing structures so that everybody's investment is realized.
Right. Well, the Opportunity Machine certainly helped me with this podcast. Zach Barker, you know, Dustin Artigo's predecessor, helped me, because sometimes when you've got expertise in one field, you don't know how to segue to another field. And I found them very helpful, just giving me practical tips. I would meet in there at no charge, and Zach gave me ideas about building content and not to think too far ahead, to focus on what you can do right now. And he helped me come up with a business plan. And I know that Chris Rader, the sponsor, you know, of our podcast that helps me produce this, he was one of your first graduates from Opportunity Machine. And now they're growing gangbusters. And he hasn't missed a beat either. They do IT work. You know, it's a software company and software support, hardware support, cybersecurity. And they haven't missed a beat, but he really got his firm footing with the Opportunity Machine.
And well, Bob Miller. Yes. Bob Miller, who was the director.
Yeah.
Yes, director at the time. Mm-hmm. Just gave him good advice. Yeah. And he had been a part of startups and he'd been a mm-hmm. part of companies growing. And he understood, and sometimes that's all you need is a mentor. Mm-hmm. And Bob's been a great mentor throughout the community, yeah. For not only tech companies, but a lot of other folks. Mm-hmm. He's one of those unsung heroes that we talk about all the time.
Right.
And then Zach and now Destin have provided considerable advice. And so that's the next thing that LEADA does, is we visit 500 existing companies a year.
Fine.
We help companies grow. We help companies find the right employee. Mm-hmm. We help companies find incentives or tax breaks that exist in the books, and they should use them because other people are using them.
Right.
And people argue against those sorts of things. That's a theoretical argument that they can have all day. But unless it's done throughout, you know, state to state, mm-hmm. you're in unfair competition if you can't incent. And in many cases, that's a tax break. And tax breaks are good in most people's eyes. Now, with that said, if you look at the ecosystem, therefore, you're talking about an organization that will help you from birth until you move on into your retirement. And the only thing we don't do, we have allies that do, and that is personal financial counseling. You know, we have There are obviously plenty of personal financial counselors in this community. And there also is a small business development center. Heidi Melanson runs a wonderful organization. Mm-hmm. And we use those services of those organizations and obviously our private tax attorneys and CPAs and counselors around the community. And all of it fills in nicely. Another thing that is wonderful that the Opportunity Machine offers, that LEADA offers, that the Chamber offers, and many other entities, is the opportunity to network and to have mentors. And there's nothing better, as you pointed out earlier, than someone saying, I'm not telling you how to do it, but this is how I do it, or this is how I would do it. What do you think? Mm-hmm. And I think that's really big. And I think in Acadiana, it's bigger than any place because people here are really friendly and trusting, generally, mm-hmm. by nature. So what we've got is an entire ecosystem built around the engine of our economy, which is business. You know, business comes first. I mean, government pops up around businesses, not vice versa. And that business creating those jobs is what we are established to help mostly. Mm-hmm. We're the only government entity that, you know, that's dedicated directly to business support.
Right. I didn't know much about LEADA until I met Ryan LaGrange, and you know, I'm a big fan of his. Ryan helps people in so many ways, but when I was practicing law full time, I had to learn new skills, and I had taken on this Upper Lafayette economic development job, and I didn't know how to do Excel. I didn't know how to do PowerPoints, presentations, and I had a lot to learn about computers and just upgrading my skill set. And so I had heard about LEADA at that point, and Ryan helped me tap into money that's available to people. I think it was up to $3,000 a year per employee at small businesses to help their workforce. If they're employed, you have to be on a, you know, the payroll, not just a contract worker. But I could take all kinds of classes that really helped me do my job better. And that's the kind of thing that I look to LEADA for. It's like not only getting a business started, but helping the employees kind of grow and thrive so the business can thrive, you know, and it's just down home help that you offer.
Thanks, Jan. Yeah. You know, it's if you're under 50 employees, you have very little time to look around and see where help is. You're trying to keep your head above water and you're working hard to make it to the next level. Well, with that said, there are grants out there, and we're the leading area of the state in terms of our businesses getting those grants. And the grants are simple. If you need to learn Microsoft Excel, you can get a small grant to do that. All you have to have been doing is paying your unemployment tax for 3 years. So if you've been around 3 years, you can take advantage of all kinds of training opportunities. And while we still lead the state, there's so many people that don't know about it. And we just keep reminding people and telling them about those kinds of small things, because $200 here and $200 there is what you can do for the very small.
Right.
And they often ask, well, what can you do for me? You only want to help the big companies mm-hmm. with 400 jobs. And the answer is, no, that's not the truth. We conducted, during the COVID thing, we've done so many sessions with our allies on how to get through this. That's just a continuation of what we already do with film and boot camps and many ways that people can learn how to be in business, to stay in business, hire people, and take advantage of some of those little known things out there that help you.
Greg, I've got a question kind of segueing from that. I know you guys do a lot of studies to look at how, let's say, COVID impacts businesses. And I've just heard a lot of people saying, you know, when all this is said and done, we are, as you said earlier, we're learning we can work remotely. We're learning we don't have to have 500 people in the office to get the job done. What is the outlook for the real estate especially commercial real estate. I'm concerned about people being able to pay their rent or their mortgage, but longer term, you know, are you anticipating a real shift in the use of real estate that we have and what's going on around the country, you know, what's already in place?
It's going to be a national trend that people are going to figure this out. And in my estimation, the commercial area will be much tougher in the future because of what happened during COVID. Now, once again, there's no substitute for personal relationships, but overbooking, so to speak, a facility might be more common. Allowing 500 people to go into a smaller space for blank hours a day, and et cetera, et cetera. Not everybody is motivated to work from home.
Right.
They realize that they can, but you know, as an employer, who gets a lot done and who doesn't. Mm-hmm. And so some people relish it, some people hate it. You know, I actually went virtual office over like 30 years ago, working for a utility company, and I hated every minute of it. I went into my empty office that was there anyway. And it was, you know, it was just one of those things that I didn't embrace. Mm-hmm. Other people find it great. And I am concerned about the commercial market. I think in Lafayette, residential will do fine over the next few years. Commercial is already seeing some devaluations, and we're going to have to deal with that. Long term, I don't know the answer. It's really a bigger question than I think I understand from the standpoint of how much office space people will feel they need. One thing for sure, though, factories will always need lots of space. And so if we concentrate on production, which leads to a big idea, and that is if we, through this COVID situation, haven't learned that we as a nation need to become energy independent, medically independent, and critical R&D and manufacturing independent, then we haven't learned anything. And we've got to bring factories back. We've got to bring those good, hardworking, you know, well-paying jobs back. We cannot excuse the kind of, and there are people on all sides that are maybe to blame or however you want to say it. But the idea that no air compressor, you know, is made in the United States, that 80% of our, 90% of our drugs and, you know, PPE and all that is not made in the United States. The idea that companies say, well, it's assembled in America, you know, well, it's not made in America, that's assembled in America. And so what they're saying, and I've read plenty of stories, is that, okay, it's engineered, it's developed, and it's assembled in America. Mm-hmm. But what does that mean? That means you've given your engineering to foreign countries, particularly China, mm-hmm. on how to make it. And it won't be long before they cut you out of the proposition.
Right.
And it's happened time and time and time again. If we as a nation don't recognize that we've got to get back to some ways, older ways, then we've squandered this this situation even more than it's hurt us, because we've got to see. We've got to open our eyes and see, because you will need lots of space for manufacturing. And manufacturing can take place in multi-story buildings. They do it in New York, and they do it in other big cities. So you can take any office building and convert it to a manufacturing, shipping, receiving facility. Mm-hmm. You can go take your business virtual. We had a seminar where a lady who owns a business in Lafayette grew her business 25% by buying a $250 piece of software and hiring a logistics company, a fulfillment company. And she increased her business 25%. Well, that tells me that you can have a physical presence and you can have a virtual presence And then you can blend those, and we need to bring it all the way back to the manufacturing presence. Mm-hmm. I know it's big picture and I know it's deep stuff, but I hope people realize that we've got to get there.
That was really thought-provoking. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, we talked about energy independence earlier, but yeah, to be dependent on our vaccines and things, you know, made in China, it's frightening.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
These are not our friends.
So this is a big policymaker issue. I guess you and your cohorts around the country, do you guys bring this up, or is this a federal, I guess it has to be on all levels.
Well, it's got to be an all level thing, and it's got to start at the top, but we have to keep saying it.
Yeah.
So I bring it up every chance I can, because I think it's that important.
Mm-hmm. We need to make our widgets locally.
Absolutely.
Right. Right. Anything I didn't ask you? I know you were prepared. There's so many facts and figures. Did we touch on the main topics? Did I forget something?
I'd like to talk about our COVID response, because it's still going on. And so I want people to be able to take advantage of it. We're manning 311.2, 311 number two, calls, and also calls from 337-769-4090. We have made and received over 2,200 calls since March. We have worked with people to get them everything from safe shop signs and masks. We helped distribute, and I'm looking at some numbers here, so pardon me, but we've helped distribute over 90,000 masks to nearly 900 businesses. We've worked with our municipalities, Broussard, Karen Crow, Scott, Dusan, and Youngsville, to distribute masks to their businesses. We have had a constant line of communication open to people. We did 781 safe shop businesses, so that people understand that early on, when we were still in phase one, there were places you could go that were safe. We've done 181 posts on social media and our website, and reached over 600,000 people.
Wow.
And have done 47 interviews and presentations like this since we started in March. And the numbers keep building. And these are unique views. And what we're talking about is information that we have vetted. And so if you go to Greg Gotro on Facebook, or you go to LEDA, Lafayette Economic Development Authority on Facebook, or if you go to lafayette.org/COVID, you're going to find all the latest information. And the latest thing going on is the grant program, both from the state and from LEDA and LCG. The BRP program, the Business Recovery Program, is the Lafayette one. We have vetted, we have looked at, and over 944 applications. Mm-hmm. And we've broken it down to 643 forms, 307 people or companies have gone to step three. And we're processing, about 1,800 of those. So with that said, we will start distributing money next week. Uh-huh. And we are going to hopefully get our $200,000 out into the hands of those who had no other place to turn. And also the city has their $800,000 that will be going to the same groups of people, businesses, and then the state has a huge amount of money that they're putting through the pipeline to help businesses. Businesses need to understand there are people that want them, that are working to help them survive. And in the case of the state, they gave up, the legislature gave up $300 million that they could have used to plug in some other place. And they put it toward business support. And I think it's important that people understand there are people that care about them and care about their employees. and that they can get support from these programs. All they need to do is go to lafayette.org/COVID, and they can access information on the BRP grant, and they can access information, although phase one of that is gone, is done, but then they can access information on the Main Street Recovery Program, several places, including our site, right, and try to get help there. So we've got to get our folks over the 50-yard line so that we can hold on down the stretch until we get to some version of normal.
Right, right. You mentioned 311.2. What is that? That's a phone? What were you saying that is?
If you live in Lafayette, in order to get to Lafayette Consolidated Government for lots of different things, mm-hmm, you just press 311 on your phone.
I've never used that.
And we're option two.
I see. Okay.
So option two takes you to a LEDA between N and two, takes you to a LEDA staff person, mm-hmm, who will talk to you, route you to the proper person if they need to do that, like Ryan Legrand, who knows all about workforce issues and unemployment issues, and will also call you back, mm-hmm, and follow up with what you need. And we've got, you know, like I said, we've handled over 2,200 such calls, mm-hmm, and so it's been a real good thing.
Yeah. So your staff hasn't been a walk in the park. They're not just relaxing at home or working remotely. You've been busy.
We're normally busy, but this is the new busy, because I'm going to tell you, they have sacrificed tremendously. They're just like anybody else with kids and worries about their parents and their grandparents, but they have put in literally hundreds and hundreds of extra hours. They went in a matter of 3 weeks from just hearing about COVID to handling these calls and vetting all the resources and watching hundreds of seminars to figure out where was the truth in all this. What actually, and what forms are the latest? And you remember those early days, it was quite complex, and we were a sort of a light of clarity. Mm-hmm. There, and it made me feel good to understand how quickly they were able to adapt to this and be productive for our people. The other thing is this loan program. My board unanimously said, let's participate in this. Let's help business. I can't think of a better thing to do for small business in this community right now than to just help them pay their rent and that sort of thing.
Stay open and try to get through this. Well, I want to encourage anybody that's been listening to use this last resource Greg was talking about. Even if you just look on Facebook and the website first and call 311 option two, I know from experience what you offer people, and many of us don't have access or the means to pay high-end CPAs and attorneys to guide us. So to have this resource, if you're a small business in particular, or an individual, a sole proprietor that doesn't know what to do, I know just even applying for the loans, you know, through the federal program was such a maze of confusion for many people. So LEDA offers a great resource.
You know, Heidi Melanson, in cooperation with LEDA 1A and our regional economic development allies, did a film on how to navigate that in the first couple of weeks, and had 24,000 views, a 45-minute film. Mm-hmm. And we were going like, okay, we're on to something. We need to get the word out on how to do these things. And yes, it's been quite a maze, and we are working very hard to help, and it's going to continue to be, to help navigate through it. And it's our job, it's our calling, and, you know, I'm very excited to be part of it.
Right. I'm excited you were a guest on the show. Greg Gautreaux, President and CEO of Lafayette Economic Development Authority, thank you for taking time to visit with us and share your message. I'm very hopeful that people that weren't aware of some of the services will call upon LEDA and get the help that they deserve. So thank you for joining us. I'd like to thank our sponsors also. We're very grateful to the support of Iberia Bank, Lafayette General Health, Raider, and in particular, Jason Sikora, who mixes our tape, and Rally Marketing. Thank you all for your support, which makes our podcast possible. And to our listeners, please share news of this podcast. You can subscribe on your phone or your device, Discover Lafayette. You can sign up for our newsletter and go to discoverlafayette.net to not only find Greg Gautreaux's interview, but over 160 other leaders in our area. We have a great variety of interviews from people like Charlie Goodson and Jimmy Guidry in the restaurant industry. We've got business leaders, healthcare. We've got so many different voices that are part of Lafayette and South Louisiana. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, thank you for listening. This is Jan Swift.